トム、スティーブ、こんにちは。この番組すごいですね。あなたたち超面白い。私が番組出てもいい？は？
Welcome, everybody, to Masters of Profundication. I'm Tom Witham.
I'm Steve Piles.
And we're back!
It's been a while.
It's been a little bit.
When was the last time we recorded? Do you remember?
It's got to be at least a month ago.
I can tell you our last published podcast was on June 11th.
It's over a month, like a month and 11 days.
A couple of days. A few days.
It's now officially the 22nd, so a month and 11 days.
Days and days and days.
Days without the Masters of Profundication, how did you all do it?
Well, you know what? There were some people that did get pretty jiggy with it. We've got some new, we can cross, did we have Brazil last time? I don't think we had Brazil.
If we did, you didn't mention it. So we got Brazil now?
We've got Brazil now.
Oh, yeah.
And the highly coveted Pakistan.
We got Pakistani listeners?
We have Pakistani listeners, and
I kind of feel like we are like forbidden in Pakistan. Congratulations, you are fighting the power. All right.
Yeah. And in the last 3 months, California has overtaken New York.
All right.
Before, we had more New York listeners than we had Maine listeners.
I just want somebody happened. From Brazil to invite us to Carnival. That's, I don't care about all the rest of you people. I don't care anymore. Once I heard Brazil, I'm like, yes, bring me down there.
If you're listening from Brazil, send Steve a plane ticket.
I'll take it. I'll do my podcast live from your country.
Ooh.
As awesome as that would be for you, I'm sure.
Yeah, I'm sure they're like, oh, that, well, you see, we weren't going to do it until, until then. So enough about that. What have you been up to? You went on a trip.
I went on a vacation. Yeah, part of the reason why we were so delayed is because I was gone for a week and a half.
I'm going to say that was all of it. But
yeah, no, that was totally the reason. It wasn't due to, you know, exhaustion on somebody's part or anything like that.
Nope, I'm not taking any of the blame.
I didn't get a text one night saying, yeah, I'm going to die on the way home. So we, I don't think we could do an episode.
Yeah, there were a few nights that I just could not do it.
Yeah, well, the two of us, one of us wants to make money and, you know, a stable life for his family and shit. So, you know, if you have hate, you know where to send the hate.
Wait a second. You don't want to make money and have a stable life?
Listen, money is the root of all evil. Money
is it, though?
Is the
though?
Yoke. It is the yoke. We need to live free, you know, freedom for everything, freedom from money, because everything's free and available for everybody always is my motto. If you know me,
cheeseburgers aren't free. Tacos ain't free.
But they should be. Somebody should make me a taco for free.
Right.
And then give me all the other stuff for free because that's
the way the world works.
That's my motto. Proletariat power.
Tacos for free. That's all.
Tacos!
That's all the communists want. That's all Stalin wanted.
Yeah, his mustache was kind of shaped like a taco, like an upside down
taco. He wanted free tacos. That's all he wanted.
It was in there. What would you put in a Russian taco?
Vodka and potatoes.
That's the only thing I could think of is vodka. Vodka and like turnips.
Yeah. Bread and cheese.
Lots and lots of root vegetables.
Lots of government cheese. I'm waiting for you to pull out a Russian accent.
In Soviet Russia, taco eats you. Wait, that could be a good thing depending on the taco we're talking about. Yeah.
I get it. I was leaving a pause there for comedic effect.
Because everybody had to think about it.
Maybe I'll put a rim shot in there.
Dirty jokes.
Indeed. Well, I haven't been up to anything other than working. I work, work, work. All work and no play make Homer a dull boy.
No, it's no beer and no TV. Make Homer
make Homer
go crazy.
Something.
Something, something. Go crazy. Don't mind if I do.
Had to get
it out of the way. Had to
get this quote out of the way. So what are we talking about today? We're talking about suspension of disbelief.
I don't believe it.
Well, you need to suspend your disbelief.
Now I believe it.
Aha, see?
See how that works?
Mm-hmm.
That's the mechanics of it. I just demonstrated the whole thing. All right, good night, everybody. My name is Bob. Oh, wait.
For the uninitiated, somebody just tuning in that doesn't know what the suspension of disbelief is, what is the suspension of disbelief?
Oh, I can even tell you exactly where it came from.
Ooh.
It's not even like, it's a term that somebody... No, I looked this up, so you're going to get some knowledge. So, the poet Samuel Taylor Coleridge, who wrote The Rime of the Ancient Mariner,
mm-hmm.
he said in 1817, what did he say? He said that willing suspension of disbelief for the moment, which constitutes poetic faith. He was talking about the concept there. He coined the phrase suspension of disbelief. So what do you think it means to suspend your disbelief?
Me personally, it means when you are entertaining yourself in some which way, whether it's a book or a song or a TV show or a movie, it's something that you're willing to disregard in order to maintain or to be entertained.
Yeah, that's pretty much it. Like, and I don't think it's, I say this, but I'm probably wrong. Like, I want to say, I don't think it's something you can choose to do. Like, it's something that has to happen to you. Like, if you're watching something or reading something and you're taken out of it because your disbelief has not been suspended, forcing yourself to go back into it is not an option in my experience. Like, I can't watch a movie going, this is the stupidest, hokiest, craziest, plot hole filled thing, but I'm gonna be all about it. I'm gonna suspend my disbelief and I'm gonna give it a, you know, I can't, once I've lost it, I've lost it. I can't come back to it.
I think that I can get back into it, but I think it's harder to do now that I'm an adult. When I was a kid with like no life experience and didn't know, you know, that aliens couldn't land, and maybe I didn't know that, but I wanted to believe a little bit more. It was easier for me to suspend disbelief without, you know, any reference point.
Yeah.
Now it's very difficult for me once I'm taken out of it. What's a really good example for you? Name a movie that does that for you, allows you to suspend disbelief easily. I have one, but
there's actually probably a lot of them. So I don't know. I'm trying to think of the quintessential one.
I'll tell you one. The Dark Knight.
Okay, yeah.
That one, like, they do a really good job of, hey, you know, there's a guy running around in a bat suit that's a super genius with really cool gadgets, and he's fighting a guy that's, like, semi-insane and dressed in crazy clothes with white face paint. And, like, halfway through the movie, I'm like, yeah, this is really happening.
Yeah, yeah.
Not necessarily like, oh, I'm sitting in a movie theater watching this movie. More along the lines of, this could really happen in New York City.
Like, they give you the right lines to make you immerse yourself. Like, at the beginning when they're doing that bank heist and they talk about the Joker wearing face paint, like you talked about, one of the henchmen says, well, it's like war paint. It's, you know, it's something to, as a calling card, it's something to mark, you know, to scare people. It's not, so nobody's looking at that going, why are we working for a guy that's dressed up like a clown? Like, there's a good line in there to explain why people are willing to follow the Joker because they buy into his shtick.
Right. And, I mean, not for nothing, there's plenty of people maybe that have imitated that, but before that movie came along, it really wasn't that hard to think about that you could be watching the nightly news and you could see some sort of, you know, crazy bank heist done by somebody wearing, you know, a weird mask or something, you know, like that was not so far outside the realm of possibilities that you could have been watching that on the nightly news. Now, the eternal struggle between the Joker and Batman is a completely different story, but they do a really good job in that movie of putting you into a good mind space that this is really going on. This, I'm entertained by this because, you know, it could happen.
Yeah,
or
I mean,
it's more realistic than, say, you know, Star Wars or something like that, which has its own problems with suspension of disbelief. But
well,
I think,
like,
your brain works on overtime to remain entertained with a lot of movies and stuff like that. It's nice to find a movie that doesn't force, you know, is easy to slip into.
Right. Like, I feel like when you're talking about this subject and you're watching movies or whatever, you watch TV, reading a book, there's categories that you fall into, sort of. Like your mind, like you said, your mind kind of does it. I feel like when you're going in a movie, you have to put that movie in a certain category. And once you do, that determines whether you can suspend your disbelief or not. Like, okay, like the Dark Knight. Yeah, I could believe that a guy that I like the fan theory that says the Joker is an ex-military person. That makes sense. So he knows how to, you know, rig a bomb and shoot a rocket launcher and, you know, use a rifle, all that stuff. And then, yeah, a guy that has all the money in the world could probably have his crazy Batmobile / motorbike / utility belt and Kevlar armor. Like, they explain all these different things he has in the first movie bleeding into the second movie. And you're like, okay, cool, I can buy that. But if you're going to watch movie, like, I just watched the new Ant-Man movie, the Ant-Man and the Wasp.
Yeah.
I have to put, and I enjoyed it. So the only way I enjoyed it, because I said, and I'm like, I'm going to put this in the category of, I don't know what I would call it, goofy sci-fi, where they're going to do things that if I nitpick are going to make no goddamn sense. But I'm going to accept the rules they laid out. PIM particles allow you to shrink and grow. So once that's established, even though that doesn't make any fucking sense, like if you shrink to the size of an atom or lower, how are you breathing? You know, crap like that. Like, what's shrinking? Like, all that. You, like, get rid of it. Throw it out of your head. Then you can enjoy it. Once they establish their rules, like, I got my crazy, you know, magic substance. Okay, cool. It's there. It exists. They've explained it. As long as the writing's good, the characterization's good, the jokes are got fine, I'm fine with it. Thor Ragnarok was the same way. The fact that, you know, all these aliens are just versions of people on Earth. And not just people on Earth, but Americans. Okay, fine. As long as I can get past that. You know, the fact that the Games Master is just this, you know,
Jeff Goldblum.
If I can get past that, then I can appreciate the jokes. I can like the fight scenes. It's all good. But if they break the rule, if they establish the rules and then break them, that's what takes me out. That's what kills my suspension. So I was going to ask you, can you think of anything that would, like an example of anything that kills it for you?
Well, the entire Walking Dead, but...
Yeah, well, perfect example then. And I'm with you. I'm still clinging on just for my... Like, I'm at the momentum phase of the thing now. I've watched so long, I want to keep watching, but yeah.
A little bit of shocker for you. I watched a trailer for all 4 seasons of Fear the Walking Dead, and I found myself wanting to watch it.
Huh. I have heard it gets better after the first season, because I watched the first season, it was utter crap.
Yeah, same. But I feel like I'm ready to give it a shot.
But you've been hurt.
I know. I have.
Your heart again.
I am willing to give. I love that genre. I love that genre. So I'm gonna try it again. Well, at some point, I'm gonna watch it.
You know what would save that entire thing?
What?
Zombie sex?
No, no.
Listen.
No.
I resurrected the idea. I get it. Resurrected the zombies. Anyways, yes, I came up with it years ago, and I still think it's doable today.
We will pose the question to the audience.
Doable zombies
at a later date. We will get to the bottom of this on whether or not zombie sex is something that people want to see on screen.
Who wouldn't? Listen, okay, it makes sense. Talking about establishing rules, you have zombies. What's a zombie at heart? It's something that, you know,
it returns to its primal urges.
Right. It's primal urge to feed. Well, after feed, there's another basic primal urge. Like, I don't see why they can't just be like going slippy, nasty, skin falling off you, squirting pus sex everywhere. That is completely believable.
Nobody wants to see that.
Everybody wants to see that. Necrophiliacs of the world, unite!
No.
Come on! Like, you're watching
That's
a movie.
Not what zombies do.
There's like moonlight coming through. Like, you're walking through like an old abandoned building, and like, instead of like jump scares, you turn the corner and there's one zombie just like Roger in the other one, and it's like,
and then you'd actually feel bad for shooting it.
Be like, you know, you're getting a little
I'll finished. Wait. I will wait until you both finish, and then I will shoot you both.
Well, maybe just the dude finishes, so you shoot the dude because he didn't let her finish. Yeah, you know? It could be a whole thing. It could totally be a thing.
Okay, I admit I would watch it just to see where it goes, but I would not enjoy it at all. I think that that
just
is...
Say that. I think
if,
you
if it were done tastefully,
see?
I can see where it would be interesting. However...
Erotic.
Okay, now you're turning a corner.
Yeah.
I mean, you're going from primal urges to now you've got zombie candles that are being lit, maybe some soft zombie music that's playing, you know, some zombie rose petals.
You could have one zombie rip the limbs off another one to have extra, you know, stimulation on the paramour. You know, like three arms instead of two to do some stroking. It'll work. It'll work.
Okay. No. Anyway.
Damn it.
The Walking Dead. I've heard the argument that anybody that's looking for logic in a TV show about zombies is kind of foolish, but that's what they sell. That's what they're trying to sell to you is this is really going on. So don't break the rules. If you want me to believe that this is really going on, don't break the rules. Simple rules. Firearms. How ammunition works. You know,
yes.
How a reasonable human being would act in a situation if there was a zombie apocalypse. You know, just have somebody watch it first before you put it on the air. Have one person sit down and watch it and say, nah, you got to change.
It feels like some of these showrunners are of the opinion that we can get away with stuff because we're popular enough, right? Like,
right.
They will forgive us because they just want to get to the gore or the shooting scene or whatever. So, okay, this is a good enough time to say this. I went to tvtropes.com to see what they said about it. They had a pretty good passage here. So for suspension of disbelief to work, they've boiled it down to this. It has to be internally consistent. If it's not internally consistent, you can still get away with it if the author is good enough. Like they say, there's this one guy that they call it Belisario's Maxim, who made Quantum Leap. And basically, he kind of hand-waved it away and saying, don't get caught up in the details. Just go along for the ride. And as long as people accepted that, they could like the show. Like I talked about Ant-Man, which doesn't make any sense. There's actually these old, from the 60s, Marvel did this, where they had their comic book characters kind of like explain their technology or their powers. Like they had Iron Man talk about how he could make his suit work because of transistors and all kinds of stuff like that. Yeah. And they would do this. I had Iceman. If you read the comics, Iceman would get around by making bridges of ice that he would form in front of him and then slide along it. So it was almost like flying through the air on these bridges of ice.
He'd constantly need to be going downhill.
Yeah. And then the bridges would fall away from him and break. And all. They try to explain it like, oh, I make pillars ahead of it so that's braced. But then the character basically looked at the, you know, broke the fourth wall and looked at the reader and said, but it's just a comic book and enjoy it for the fun ride.
Uh-huh.
So you know what? I can get behind that. If you are willing to own it and say, listen, it's fine, it's fun enough and enjoyable enough that you can ignore it, cool. But if you are breaking these rules and just being lazy by doing it, that's when the belief goes out the window. So like they say right here, a common way of putting this is you can ask an audience to believe the impossible, but not the improbable. So the example they use is you can have a magic user teleport across the world, or a spaceship that makes it invisible, but its own sensors still work. But you can't accept the fact that a carnivorous monster just happens to have a heart attack and die right before the main character gets eaten. Or a hacker guesses the enemy's password on the first try by just typing random letters, not without something to explain that. That's the difference between believable fiction and unbelievable fiction. You know, if I'm fighting, you know, this ninja, and I have no training whatsoever, and there's no reason for me to be able to win, I still win. That's not believable. With no explanation, no magic power, no nothing.
Although, if you're clumsy and you trip around and you knock over like a bowling ball that was up on a shelf and it bonks the ninja on the head and you walk away unscathed, victorious because you were clumsy.
Well, that better be the shtick then. That better happen a bunch of times for me to...
Well, Mr. Magoo or something like that.
It's a taut, you know, action thriller with, you know, murderous ninjas everywhere. Just the hero happens to, you know, live by a bowling ball. then I'm done. If I'm watching that movie, I'm done. I'm shut out of that completely. Yep. Like if it's a slapstick comedy where that's the shtick, fine. I will give it a chance. But if the tone of the movie is not that whatsoever, and that's your explanation of how the hero lives, I'm through.
Unless it's an 80s action flick, and then you can get away with
well, you know what you're in for at that point. You know that Schwarzenegger is going to throw a grenade and kill five people in a 50-yard radius, you know, stuff like that.
Yeah. Lethal Weapon.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
Well, here's an example I think we might disagree on it, but we've talked about it, is Book of Eli.
We disagree on when he was blind or...
Well, that...
Spoiler alert.
Yeah, right. That the suspension of disbelief even happens. I might be misremembering your position, I guess, but...
What, the suspension of disbelief that the hand of God was directing him or...
Well, the whole conceit is that, you know, he's blind. You don't know it till the end.
Right, and he's able to do these incredible things.
Right, he's a fighter. He can do all kinds of stuff, and while he's blind.
Well, it's because he's directed by the hand of God.
And that's my suspension of disbelief destroyer right there, which is, well, okay, like, let's get to the religious aspect of it, but it's basically, if God's going to help him do all these things, A, it makes the impact much less, because it's not his own ability, his own skill, his own training, his own... gumption, whatever, getting him through it. It's magic man in the sky is protecting me. And then B, well, then hell, all the people that died that didn't need to die, why did God let them die? You know, all the shitty state of the world, why did God let that happen? If he's going to protect this dude, why did God just find a prophet and give a revelation to, you know, Caligula and give him the Bible that way and not put what's his name through the whole thing, you know, Denzel Washington through the whole thing?
Because he had to go through a trial?
Yeah. See, now, like I said, this is the religion thing coming up. I will avoid that discussion. But yeah, for me, it's a bad plot twist. I can't suspend my disbelief once that hits, because it has to be the hand of God. You look back, you watch that movie knowing he's blind, and there's shit he does that. I don't care how trained and skilled you are. No blind man ever would be able to get away with that stuff.
Well, essentially dodging bullets.
Yeah.
There's a point in there where the guy's firing the gun directly at him and the bullets aren't hitting him. I mean, the only explanation for that is divine intervention.
Yeah, and that's where I personally have a problem with that. But, you know, to each their own, I guess. If you want to swallow the Kool-Aid, you know, go ahead.
Trying to think of another... Oh, I know once you start getting into, like, serious sci-fi and stuff like that, maybe not even sci-fi, like space operas, like Star Wars... In The Phantom Menace, they break so many of their own rules all the time. Mm-hmm. They establish these rules, and then just without warning, they'll break those rules. Like, starting with one of the first scenes in the first movie, when Obi-Wan and Qui-Gon are fighting the droids.
Mm, yeah.
The rolling droids. And in order to escape them, they run really fast. And if you watch that scene, it's almost ridiculous how fast they run. They exit stage left in the blink of an eye, and that's their Jedi sprinting powers.
Right, right. It's like the Flash. It's like super speed.
It is. It's absolutely like literally blink of an eye, pew, they're gone. Yet they don't seem to use it in any other way throughout the entire series.
Exactly.
The only time they ever use this super speed ability is when they're escaping those droids. They fight Darth Maul at the end, and like there are these doors, these radiation doors that are closing that Obi-Wan is running towards.
Yeah, Obi-Wan's trapped. At what point did he think, oh shit, I could be right there with him in 2 seconds?
I could do the instant Flash Jedi sprint and be there in the blink of an eye, yet I'm not gonna. Like, why? What was the point in doing that? What was the point in making R2-D2 fly once or twice and then never doing it
again? Well, it's kind of one of the problems with the prequels, and it is what it is. They had better budgets and a little time to think about things, you know, choreography. But you watch that, you watch the prequels and all the things the Jedi could do, all the things the Force users could do, and then you watch the original trilogy again, and Darth Vader looks like a geriatric.
Yeah.
You know, it's just, especially A New Hope, but even with, like, after all the crazy crap that, you know, Anakin could do, man, Darth Vader's supposed to be what? Who's afraid of him? You know, I don't know. It's anybody that was older, living in the Star Wars universe, that remembers the Jedi would see Darth Vader fight going, wow, what the hell happened to this guy?
Well,
but I mean, it is what it is. The original movies were made at a certain time. Then they had better budget for the prequels.
Well, I'm talking within the same movie.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Episode one, right out the gate, establishes a rule and then breaks it.
Well, here's the thing, too. Sometimes suspension of disbelief is only particular for certain people. Like, if you know something, like, you can be that stupid asshole that ruins things by saying, in real life, this would never happen. So your suspension of disbelief is shattered, and then you can ruin it forever. Like, so, like, for me, I can't watch CSI. I can't fucking do it.
Yeah.
Because I'm sitting there going, nope. Goddamn, no, that doesn't work that way. No, that's wrong. Like, it's terrible. Like, when I first moved out to Maine, I lived with a roommate. He would watch CSI on the background all day long. It was like on Spike or something like that. It was just on all day. And I would be playing on, you know, my computer, talking or doing something else. And I would look and I'd be like, that doesn't work that way all the time. And I realized I could never watch the show seriously because I know enough about the ins and outs of forensics to shit all over it.
Right. So, but you don't have to be a forensics expert or in the FBI to watch Silence of the Lambs and be like, I really, really like this movie. However,
yeah. Well, no, I can't imagine somebody that's a historian watches something like, I don't know, Black Sails is going, no, in the Caribbean, in, you know, 1732, this was not the case. And
they wouldn't have grown coconuts on that island.
Yeah. You know, all kinds of stuff like that could get you. And for everybody else, it's like, oh, geez, dude, don't let it ruin you. It's like, you can't help it. Like, this is what I said at the beginning. Like, sometimes it's not voluntary. Like, you can't force yourself to get into it. If you know that all these things are stupid and wrong, like, you're done. Like, you can't bring yourself back into it.
Yeah.
It's like, who is it? Neil deGrasse Tyson, that physicist. Like, he's made a name for himself by shitting all over movies because they get all these details wrong.
Yeah.
Like, he said that this constellation that they used for the background in Titanic was in that time of year, in that location, and that, you know, all stuff was wrong. And he, like, that was a start. So he goes through, like, stuff like Gravity or any sci-fi, The Martian, like, any sci-fi movie, and say exactly what they did wrong.
Yeah.
And he's got, like, a reputation now as being this pedantic kind of nitpicker.
Douchebag.
A little bit. Like, he's well-liked, I guess, but yeah, in some corners, it's like, oh, God, here's Neil deGrasse Tyson telling you what's wrong with this. What the hell's wrong with Interstellar? What the hell's wrong with all this? Every sci-fi movie out there, he'll tell you exactly what's wrong with it. So I got to imagine that he can't enjoy sci-fi movies. Like, he goes to one going, all right, let's see what they're going to fuck up this time. So it's almost like, I don't know. I feel like the person that enjoys movies the most, or TV or anything, is the the stupid and the ignorant.
The people that know nothing.
The people that know shit. It's like the ignorance is bliss is like a cliche for a reason. Like, the less you know, the happier you are or something. I don't know.
Or the, no, I don't know about that. But I do know that there are certain movies for certain people. The Avengers didn't make the amount of money it did because people are dumb. It's more escapism and, you know,
but
not
the last shit I did. Just saying. Anyway, sorry, go ahead.
Well, I'm just saying that, you know, there are people that grow up and people that don't.
Sure.
And I am in the category of people that never grew up. I enjoy Absolutely. A good story. I love to use my imagination. I dig that kind of stuff. And there are certain people that that's not their cup of tea. And, you know, more power to you. If you don't like that stuff, ignore it. I hate it when people get real judgmental about that kind of stuff. But otherwise, you know, they make a movie for everybody. Everybody yeah. has their choice of movies. Some have more than others. But, you know, just because somebody finds enjoyment in one thing versus another doesn't mean, you know, well, I suppose it's not that it doesn't mean anything. Certainly what's making the most amount of money is going to get more stuff made. But, there are outlets everywhere for all types and all tastes. And, you know, every once in a while I run into somebody that's just not into movies or doesn't read or, you know, can't, like, that's one of my things when I meet new people, because we meet a lot of new people at our work, whether it's staff or otherwise. And like one of my barometers is, what's your favorite movie, or what's your favorite TV show, or what's your favorite, like, everybody that I've ever worked with at that place, I've asked those questions.
Oh yeah.
You know, like if you're just sitting around, you know, in a housing unit, or if you're just kind of passing the time, that'd be my question. And it'll usually be followed up with another question about, you know, something that they like or dislike. And, you know, I come across people every once in a while that, I just don't watch TV, or I don't watch movies, or I couldn't tell you what my favorite movie is. And I find that to be like unbelievable that.
Yeah. I mean, I can, like, see maybe not having a favorite movie or a favorite, you know, whatever, because you've never ranked them. Sure.
Right. But not being able to come up with something that you enjoy.
Yes.
Like, what do you do? Like, go home and stare at a blank wall.
I actually years ago, I dated this girl who, if not for very long, it was really rough because, you know, the whole try to get to know each other thing. I was like, so, you know, yeah, exactly what you said. What are you into? What do you like to do? What do you like to do? Like movies, TV, music? I don't know. Like, seriously, that was, I was like, I remember looking at going, wait, what? Like, do you like to watch TV shows? Not many.
Now, movies, did you have this conversation with her from behind a fern?
Yeah, you know, I was whispering it. And she was crying. Maybe that put a little damper on the entire experience. I don't know. When she's like, just let me go home and see my family. I'm like, no, you will tell me what your favorite
sit here, Missy.
Is. Give me a quote by Homer Simpson. Now! I'm sorry, I don't know. Does he say...
You don't know the Simpsons?
Dollop or something? God. That's when I peel her eyelids open and strap her to a chair and watch marathons of, like, Buffy the Vampire Slayer. You'll appreciate this!
I don't think I can hold you captive anymore if you don't like the Simpsons.
We had something. We had a relationship. It's out the window.
I can't hold you against your will if you don't like this.
There's no payoff for me here.
But I like finding somebody that enjoys something off the beaten path, something that I enjoy as well. Like, every once in a while, somebody will say they like a show that not everybody has heard of or likes, and I enjoy it as well, and that's our little thing.
Mm-hmm.
I like that kind of stuff.
Someday I'm going to find somebody that's a huge H.P. Lovecraft fan. I'm going to.
Keep looking.
I'm going to find somebody that's at least heard of him. And then I'm going to find a fan.
Well, I think a lot of people have heard of him.
Not a lot of people I meet.
Well, I mean, you got to come out from behind the fern.
No, I don't. That's every part of this scenario involves creepy fern voyeurism. Never come out from behind the fern.
Yeah, unless you want trouble.
Nobody wants trouble.
So
I found a actually like a writer's forum about people talking about, so what breaks your suspension of disbelief? Like, what are some of the hard and fast things that do it? And some of this was actually really cool. Like, somebody like broke it down. So I thought I'd go into that if you are giving me your blessing here.
Yes.
So this random person posting says, so the question, what precisely seems implausible can be highly individual. Here are the major issues. First and foremost, like we talked about, setting rules are inconsistent or unclear. So if you don't know the rules, if you're watching it and something happens and you're out of the blue, because as a viewer, you didn't know this was a thing that could happen. That
Mulholland
gets
Drive. Disbelief.
Right. Well, for me, something like that is I disbelieve all of it. So I'm just going to take it in. Like something crazy psychedelic like that. I don't know. I have to be in a completely different framework. Like I said, different categories. Like, I got to put a movie into a category so I can deal with it as it is.
Mm-hmm.
Well, there's this guy named Grant Morrison, who's a comic book writer. And he, if he is shackled, he does really good work. He'll write for the X-Men. Or like, he wrote a lot of Batman. But if the powers that be let him off the leash and let him just do his own thing, it's the most batshit crazy gobbledygook you've ever seen in your life. And I cannot get behind it whatsoever. Like, he did this Batman story where, like, somebody was driving him crazy, like messing with his mind. And all of a sudden, he became, what are they called? The Batman of Zen-R-er, because Bruce Wayne developed a backup personality just in case that would happen.
Oh.
And he wore this Batman costume. It was like pink and purple.
Wow. What?
And Randy and Pat, it was the nuttiest fucking thing you'd ever seen. And this was, and like, I'm sitting there reading this going, this, what am I supposed to get out of this? How am I supposed to believe any of this? This is the stupidest thing I ever saw. But the rest of that arc was awesome until you got to that point. Then it was the stupidest fucking thing you ever saw.
Hmm.
And it was like, oh, he made a backup personality that would become the default personality until he could fix his brain. It was crazy. And that's what I'm talking about. Like, you have to set up rules, because if shit comes out of nowhere, you're done. Like, I can't buy it anymore.
Yeah.
Or for me, like, I think I've talked about this before, is magic. Like, if I'm watching something, and like, I loved, like I mentioned, Buffy the Vampire Slayer. I loved that show, but very often I was frustrated by it because all of a sudden there was a spell for it. Oh, we need to do this. There's a spell for it. Oh, we need to do that. There's an artifact. There's a magic totem. There's a this, there's a that that'll help us move the plot forward and resolve this. That was completely out of nowhere. Sunnydale was full of magic books and old tombs with magic swords and spells and all this crap that they needed just at the right time. Like, there was never an instance where they're like, oh, I have this talisman, but I don't know what to do with it, so I'm going to stick it in my pocket. And then at the end of the season, it came in handy. It was that episode. They found what they needed to defeat the bad guy that episode. And that shit got...
formula.
Yeah. It got old. And then there's the implication. Like, this is the other suspension of disbelief, and I'll use Buffy as an example. If you know the show, the character Angel is a vampire with a soul, right?
Okay.
So he lost his soul because he got happy fun time with Buffy, and that, you know, he committed the sin of sex. And he was happy, and he lost his soul, so he became an evil bad guy.
Mm-hmm.
But he got his soul back because Buffy's friend Willow used a magic spell to put it back into him. Yeah. They just had to find this little orb. And the funny thing is, at one point, somebody else was going to do it, but Angel smashed the orb. And then when they need to do it again, the Buffy's mentor, Giles, is like, oh, yeah, I got one of those. He literally just had this fucking orb in a back room somewhere. Yeah, totally, I got one. Well, apparently, these things are like from the gumball machine of magic or something.
Yeah.
And then Willow's like, boom, soul. So what we do is we established a rule that there is a spell, as long as you have a spell and this artifact, you can put a soul back in a vampire, and they're basically human again. Why didn't they do that with every vampire they met afterwards?
Well,
every time Buffy killed a vampire. What's that?
You just got to move on.
Yeah. Well, from this point forward, this rule's been established that now every time Buffy kills a vampire, she's basically a murderer because they could have saved this vampire. But everybody ignores that. So, like I said, I watched the show. I was able to compartmentalize and ignore that much of it, but it always bugged me because they established the rule and then broke it thoroughly.
It just goes back to our idea that television shows need to be 3 seasons max. 10 yes. episodes each.
Yep, exactly. Because that was second season. They could have routed out for the third season and been done. Yeah, exactly it. Like, 3 seasons, that could have been it.
Yep, 3 10-episode seasons, you're done. Move on.
Which, coincidentally, 3 seasons was all Angel was in Buffy.
Maybe it means something.
Yeah. So, yeah, that was the first one, is setting rules that are consistent or inconsistent or unclear takes you out of it. Excessive and or unacknowledged inconsistency with the real world. So, like I was talking about, details that you know about that, you know, you couldn't really do that. You know, bulldozers right. don't work this way.
It's if like us have- watching Monsters Ball or The Green Mile.
Yes, anything with a jail setting.
Yeah.
Prison setting. Like, if I watch, you know, Orange is the New Black, there's a TV show on Netflix called Wentworth, which is a women's prison in Australia.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I can stomach it a little bit because I don't know Australia. So maybe that's how things work. But the freedom they have, because the women can have their kids in the prison with them.
Okay.
They can be in each other's rooms constantly.
Well, that's how you make a good TV show.
Unmonitored around all kinds of equipment that could be used for all kinds of nefarious. Like, is that how prisons work? This is nuts.
Yeah. But that's how they do it in Scotland.
Yeah, Scotland. That's how the AC/DC does it in Scotland with Australians. With their fucking kilts and whatnot.
Bagpipes.
So number 3 is coincidence as a plot development. So anytime you're just relying heavily on coincidence, it just comes off as completely contrived. Like, you're watching it and all of a sudden, you know, these two characters meet up because they just happen to be walking through the same street market. your two main characters that have no reason to know each other come in at the same time and meet each other. Like, oh, hey, what's going on? Like, if all the people of all the times, if one would have been 5 minutes quicker, they never would have met, you know, shit like that. Yeah. It's a little bit hard to swallow. It's
sliding doors.
It's contrived. Yeah. And which takes that trope, takes that idea and actually makes something out of it. So that's kind of cool.
Mm-hmm.
But like, if that's the original opening scenario, then fine. That's how your characters met. Then everybody's cool with that. But if you're all the way through the TV show or the movie, like at the end, like, you know, two characters are separated by a great distance and they come together at that just one magical moment, it takes you out of it.
Yeah.
You're just like, okay, I have no idea how that would have happened. Because literally a million things could have happened and would have kept that from happening. So the coincidence is unreal for that happen. Yeah, that takes you out of it. And that's rough too. Because I'll tell you, like, when I write, there's a lot of coincidences, and I just hope they're not too distracting, too unbelievable. It's hard to get around. I'll say that.
Right. Well, I mean, some of it is a filmmaking style too. Like, you need, when writers are writing for TV or movies, you need dialogue to end at a certain time when somebody walks in the room at just the right time. I mean, there's a lot of coincidences that way, but I think we've been trained to watch TV that way, that somebody finishes a line of dialogue and then somebody enters the room in order to, you know, extend the plot.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's kind of necessary, but I mean, I don't know.
Well, I mean, it as a storytelling device, when you're watching a TV show, I mean, the next time you watch a TV show, count how many times somebody ends their dialogue uninterrupted. And as soon as they're done their dialogue, somebody walks in the room, or a phone call comes at that moment, or, you know, the file that they've been waiting to download finishes downloading right when they're done talking. You know, there's just coincidences that way. And I think that we're trained as good viewers to just accept that.
Well, there is expediency. Like, you have to get, you, nobody wants that scene where everybody's kind of sitting around waiting for, you know, the secretary to show up with the information they're waiting for, you know,
or
shit like that.
When good dialogue is being interrupted by something, like, it's like I said, it's, we don't necessarily notice it all the time, but now that I've said it, the next time you watch a TV show, you wait. Friends was Seinfeld, perfect example. How many times did Kramer enter the room at the right time, or the speaker box get called up at the right time, or Joey or Chandler walking through the door just in the at the exact time that they needed to, when dialogue was per, you know what I mean? Like, the next time you watch TV, just pay attention to that. We're trained to ignore it. We're trained to accept it. That's how shit is.
Now, you might have just done something there, because it's like nobody wants to see how the sausage is made. Like, if you're aware of this, and you might have ruined every piece of fictional entertainment ever. Like, all you're seeing now is a massive coincidences. And
I can't roll that one back. Yeah. Nope. Yep. I can't go and delete that.
All you will see.
Yeah. Well, I do. I
you're
see
welcome, listening audience. You will never unsee this.
Yeah.
Well, it's like, it's a little off topic, but I want to share this. It's like, I saw this essay a few weeks ago about the modern action films, how the Bourne trilogy, or the original three movies, ruined modern action films.
Yeah.
Because the guy that wrote it said Bourne did it right. The Bourne director, the Bourne cinematographer, he did it right. But everybody after that tried to emulate it with the quick, you know, exact fighting and the, you know, basically taking anybody and turning them into an action star.
Mm-hmm.
Like, Matt Damon's not Bruce Lee, but they turn him into a really good action star
by quick cuts.
Yes,
extreme choreography.
This guy did it right with the Bourne movies, because and I agree, I love the Bourne movies. But then every wannabe action director for the last 15 years has tried to emulate that. So they turn Liam Neeson into a fighter with a Taken movie, but they do it wrong. It's quick cuts. So if you watch these movies now, you never see a full. A typical scene lasts a second, maybe 2 seconds.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's cut, then it's cut, then it's cut. So you never see Liam Neeson actually beginning a kick and ending a kick to the guy's chest from start to finish. You're seeing him start the move, then the foot hit, because it cut away to it.
Yep.
And now, once I read this essay, and I it was a YouTube video. That's what it was. So once I saw this and I saw the cuts, done. Like, I can't unsee that shit now.
It was it.
Yep. I cannot unsee it now. So I've been watching. I started watching Into the Badlands.
Oh, okay.
And I'm enjoying it because they don't, for the most part, do that. Like, the guy that they got to do the lead is obviously an actual martial artist. So he's doing the actual spins and punches and all that stuff. But not everybody is. So when they got to have somebody that's not an actual fighter, like just a regular actor doing this,
it reverts.
Quick cut over and over. I'm like, I'm seeing nothing but it.
Yeah.
So, yeah. And then it also has, getting back to the subject, that TV show also has a little bit of rule breaking because there's a supernatural element to it that they haven't explained yet, but it's there for certain characters, but not everybody. Some characters are supposed to be just normal guys that fight, but they're doing the whole wire fighting, big flip, floating away. You know, somebody gets a kick to the chest, all of a sudden they're flying 100 feet backwards, all kinds of stuff like that. So that's a little bit of like, my suspension of disbelief is pretty hard to maintain here. Like, maintain the rules. Are these fighters mystical fighters or not? Yeah, I don't know. Anyways, yes. So the fourth one that this guy had on the list is unjustified references to real world elements. So his example was in fantasy and science fiction, direct references to the real world can be distracting. Something like if you have 2,000 years in the future, you have a starship named after a 20th century politician like Bill Clinton.
Yeah.
That's distracting. There's no reason why 2,000 years in the future, somebody like Bill Clinton would be famous and remembered enough to be named a starship after or something. You know, things like that. You can have, what do you say? You can have a princess named Diana, but you better not call it Princess Diana because that's distracting.
Because we would conjure up images of the actual Princess Diana in our head.
Right, exactly. You can do that. Like, if you do that, it's going to be distracting. Unless you do it for laughs or you're making a reference on purpose, you know, it's not going to work. If you start having a character quote, you know, if you have a cowboy and he says something like man hands, I'm going to immediately be taken out of the right. atmosphere of it.
Well, there are rules to follow for suspension of disbelief in different genres, different movie types. Mm-hmm. And the one that comes to mind that actually does a really good job of it because they actually explain it in Breaking the Fourth Wall is Zombieland.
Yeah, sure.
They at the very beginning, well, throughout the movie, they give certain rules on how to survive a zombie apocalypse by putting graphics up on the screen and narrating what the different rules are in order to survive in this world. So they basically build the rules of this world in narration while you're watching the movie. And I think that that's really clever. That's actually one of the reasons I love that movie.
Yes. Besides the fact that it's just a fun, funny movie, but yes, it's fine. You buy it. Like, I get it. Like, the guy's narrating it. So of course he's breaking the fourth wall, you know, all this shit.
Right. And it plays to what our imagination already knows. Like,
yeah,
in the zombie apocalypse, of course, the people who do cardio are probably going to survive before the people that don't.
Yeah.
You know, people that wear their seatbelt are probably going to survive more than people that don't. And these are the examples. Yada, yada, yada.
Stretches. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of stuff like that that I really enjoy. And I think that other genres could get away with that. I'm not even sure if they probably have. I want to say that there is another movie that takes that approach that explains the rules of, like, do they do that in 10 Ways to Lose a Guy?
I don't know. I never saw that. I'm not a big romantic comedy.
Right. But I mean, in romantic comedies, there's a certain set of rules.
Sure.
Those rules probably don't apply to zombie movies.
Well, they did do a romantic comedy zombie movie.
Yeah. But I mean, crossovers aside, each different genre and each different type of movie has its own set of rules. Mm. Like, just like we said earlier with the 80s movies, 80s action flicks. They got their own set of rules, man. There's going to be a high-speed chase. Somebody's going to drive through a plate glass window, you know, with a Ferrari.
Yeah. There's going to be a sex scene with a saxophone in the background.
That's right. There are certain rules, and these rules keep us in the game. They keep us suspending our disbelief because I mean, if there was a high speed chase down, you know, Broadway in New York City where a Ferrari was outrunning cops and smashing through windows and like gunfire out the window, like that would make national news.
Oh, God. But yeah.
In those movies, they treat it like that's an everyday occurrence. Actually, Bad Boys 2 did a really funny shtick with that, with the highway, the freeway chase and the blowing up of the boat and all that stuff. And the chief is in the office and he's having like major heartburn.
Oh, right, right. Yeah, Joey Pants. Yeah.
Joey Pants was doing the thing. But I mean, that's another like rule for those movies is to have the chief. The chief is always mad. The chief always has to answer to a higher power, and his underlings that he's going to bat for are, you know, a little bit loose cannon. And, you know, there are these rules. And maybe that's what those tropes are. Maybe the tropes are rules that keep us in check. They're like the new movie Rampage with The Rock. At the end of that movie, the gorilla, the ape, whatever, the ape that he's been working with through the whole movie saves his ass like 7 or 8 times. Like he's in the jaws of one of the bad guys and the ape comes in and saves the day, you know, surprise helicopter style. And then 5 minutes later, he's in the jaws of like he's getting ready to have a building collapse on him, and in comes the ape to save the day. Surprise helicopter. And then, you know, like that happens, it has to be 4 or 5 times easy where you think, oh, this is the end for The Rock, and then he's saved by the ape last second helicopter.
What?
You know? No. Yeah. So maybe those rules are in place. Those tropes are in place as an unwritten set of rules to keep our suspended disbelief.
I would agree with that. Yes. Because without, like I mentioned with that Grant Morrison, without rules, you know, when this guy's unleashed, you can't believe anything. It's nothing works. So you got to have the rules. You got to have boundaries. You got to have restraints. Well, here I found examples. So violating established rules, somebody sat down with a few examples of what works and like, what's a good example of it. So positive example of establishing rules and following it was the first Matrix.
Yeah.
What do you say? You have the Matrix. Once Neo leaves the Matrix, Morpheus, King of Exposition, explains the entire deal to him, teach him how the Matrix works, but then foreshadows it and says, but he's waiting for the one for whom these rules don't necessarily apply.
Yeah.
That works. That's fun. That establishes everything. And you're waiting for it. You know it. As the audience, I'm not sitting there amazed that Neo all of a sudden begins to stop bullets and all that stuff. I'm waiting for that movement. I'm anticipating it. I'm just edge of my seat, waiting for that culmination of that promise of, but there's the one who can bend the rules and break the rules and do what he needs to free us and all this shit. That's why The Matrix is going to be an enduring movie forever. And that's also why the sequels are going to be universally derided forever. Because all of a sudden, Neo could do whatever the fuck he needed to. There was no more rules. Like, what was it? The third one? Where Agent Smith goes into the real... Oh, no, the end of the second one. Agent Smith goes into the real world because... Yes. And has this guy's body? How the fuck? There's nothing to explain that whatsoever.
Well, he was a virus.
So, some kind of data bits hit his soft matter of the brain and rewrote? It made no sense.
Yeah.
You know, you have all of a sudden they say monsters are, you know, glitches left over from earlier versions of the Matrix.
Right. Like werewolves and vampires.
Werewolves and vampires. And then Neo fights all these things. And okay, fine. But at the same time, Morpheus and Trinity are fighting them too. They should get creamed. And then a scene later, they're fighting agents and not dying right away, which in the first movie, they already said, you see an agent, you run because you're not going to win.
Yeah.
And Neo already said the agents got upgrades in the first part of the movie, but Morpheus and Trinity are fighting them and surviving. That's why those movies fall apart, because they break their own rule.
Agreed.
But the first movie does it great. So he said a bad example of this, and this is almost notorious, Superman 2. Do you know what I'm kind of talking about? There's a couple instances.
You got to hit me with it. I'm all those old Superman movies with Christopher Reeves, they blend together for me. Are you talking about the one with... the three with Zod.
Yeah, the three Kryptonians.
Yep.
Subplot for that movie was that Lois Lane finds out he's Superman. Like, he confesses to her. But at the end of the movie, he figures out that she's going to be in danger, or she can't take that, or something like that. And he kisses her and erases her memory.
Yeah, because that's what Superman does.
That is not a power Superman's ever had in the comics. He never had in the movies.
It's because he used tongue.
She was like, wow, that's how he kisses. Yeah, totally. I don't remember anymore. Like,
she was faking the whole time.
I like that. That's a good theory. I'm going to go with that theory. That she was like, oh, I forgot. Oh,
wow, what a kiss. I forgot everything that you told me before.
It's like, that was one unsuper tongue. Oh, shit. He's like tweaking her nipples as he's making out with her. Oh, God, I gotta end this now somehow. Holy shit.
He doesn't know his own strength.
And then he stands back. He's going, oh, I guess my kiss erased her memory? Okay.
Well, thank God. We can start from square one.
I have superpowers that do. Yeah, I like that. That's my new fan theory, that Lois was faking it because she didn't want to get with him anymore. And the other part of that movie that's kind of dumb is when he's fighting them at the end, he rips off the ass from his chest and throws it, and it becomes this big elastic rubbery cocoon thing that grabs what it makes no fucking sense whatsoever.
That's what his suit does, man.
And the TV show Smallville was like that the entire time. Like, just one stupid ass thing after another that popped up. But then he talks about the last thing here, suspension of disbelief, poorly written characters. So like, he's talking about a good example of a well-written character is Spider-Man 2. Within the rules, within the context, the Peter Parker in that movie was pretty good. You know, he's got the struggle, he's got the angst, he's got all that stuff, and it worked. He wanted to give up because his life sucked. It actually worked really well. But a negative example of poorly written character, is like every Michael Bay movie.
Transformers,
Armageddon. They're all just bad characters. Like, it's funny to me. If you watch, I saw this clip, if you watch behind the scenes, or like the director's commentary of Armageddon, they have Ben Affleck, you know, doing like narration, commentary, and commenting on different scenes.
Yep.
I guess he shits on the movie the entire time.
Really?
He talks about how none of it makes sense. Everything is like plot holes. Like, you listen to the commentary track while you watch the movie, and you hear Ben Affleck going, oh, and then we got this scene here. This doesn't make any goddamn sense. Why the hell would it be easier to take a bunch of drillers and train them as astronauts than train astronauts as drillers? That doesn't make any fucking sense. Like, Ben Affleck's shitting on the entire movie the entire way through.
That's funny.
Like, it's actually pretty funny, yeah.
I liked The Island. That was Michael Bay.
I mean, yeah, I could see it. I did like The Island. I mean, I'm not even saying these are unlikable movies, just bad characters.
Yeah.
Bad characterization, not very full-fleshed. And if they're bad enough, like James Bond, you have to go in there knowing what you're going to see. So
go easy. You know I'm a Bond fan.
I know. But like, the newer Bonds try to get a little more grounded. But the old Connery Bonds.
Oh, yeah. Well, Roger Moore's Bond was wackadoo, man. All kinds of, like, there were some scenes in the Roger Moore Bond movies that are pure comedy. They're not.
Oh, yeah.
And that was hitting cinemas at the time when that was acceptable. Like, you know, like showing a pigeon do a double take at something ridiculous. Come on. You know, like.
Did they have like a Texas sheriff pop up in a couple movies?
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Oh, yeah. You're that guy, that British agent.
I think in that movie is probably the biggest James Bond sin is when he takes the jump with the car and they do the slide whistle.
See, that's what it just turns into, a slapstick comedy.
I know. And that version of Bond is my favorite version. Don't get me wrong, because that's, you know, Roger Moore is my James Bond. Daniel Craig's the best. Daniel Craig is the best James Bond.
Yeah.
But Roger Moore is my James Bond. And that's when I started watching James Bond. So I have a fondness for it. But at 0 point in time do I suspend disbelief in any of the Roger Moore James Bond movies. Are just ridiculous. They're silly. And they're like full of one-liners and shtick, and
yeah,
it's just they're fun, but that's all they are. They're fun. They're not like, here, take me seriously. I'm gonna, you know, some of the newer stuff is that way too. Like, and they play on it, like in Spectre. Is it Spectre? Yeah, it's Spectre when he's in Mexico and the building collapses on him and he falls in a chair or in a couch.
There's kind of
like a boom boom ch, and moving
on. No, wait. The part of that movie that's the most shatters your suspension of disbelief is when he's, you know, at the beginning walking with the mask on with that chick, and then she lays down like ready for him and he moves on past her. No way. Just no.
Yeah, it's James Bond.
It's James Bond. He's gonna do her real quick and then go assassinate somebody.
Yeah. That's how James Bond does it.
Yeah.
But you know, it is what it is.
It is. Poor use of a penis is what it is.
Oh man. Guess what?
Gonna die.
I am getting pretty loopy. So,
well, I'm at the end of my research stuff anyway. So, oh, one last thing though, and I am with this guy, and this is specific to books. Bad grammar takes you right the fuck out of it.
Yeah,
it just takes you right. Like, I've read some fan fiction online, and I am bad grammar, bad, like somebody that writes one giant fucking paragraph or something like that. Just the mechanics of it can't do it. You might have the greatest, most original, amazing idea ever for a plot, but if you're misspelling your words and you're putting your quotation marks in the wrong spot and you don't put apostrophe where it's supposed to be there, I cannot do it.
Yeah,
so there's that.
Okay, well, I'm gonna try really hard to make it next week too. No promises, because this is a pretty short episode.
We don't have a topic for next week. Somebody's gonna, that's listening, needs to suggest a topic for us.
Brazilian tits.
Got it. Nope. I'm on board.
Carnival. That's what the
carnival.
Carnival.
Things that I will never see because nobody's gonna actually pay for a plane ticket for me.
Hey, we've got fans in Brazil, so you never know.
You one person, because I know there is just one person paying for me to get down there.
Right. You know you probably get bugged.
You just gotta
steal your wallet and throw your body in a dumpster.
Stay in the tourist spots and you'll be okay. It's like everywhere else.
At the Copacabana.
That's right. You know where all the supermodels are. But that's every woman in Brazil, if I remember right.
Let's do some trivia.
Trivia. You want to go first? Do you want me to go first?
I'll go first because it's going to be probably either really easy or really hard.
Okay.
It's Latin.
That's so. Liberate tut mas ex feris.
Am I going to get disemboweled now?
Probably. By the guy from Jurassic Park.
Which Latin word is used to express the meaning word for word?
Tete-a-tete.
I don't even know what that means.
Okay. No, I think that's French.
Starts with a V.
So it's one word.
But one word. Latin word is used to express the meaning word for word.
Verbatim.
Yes.
Ooh, yeah.
Sweaty.
I know my Latin. Actually, I know a fair amount of Latin for never having taken a class in it, because I'm awesome. Don't you laugh at that.
I just did.
Okay, fine. Okay, so here's mine.
Okay.
Are you ready? Are you prepared?
I am on a different planet right now, so hopefully.
Do you want to believe? All right.
Oh, I definitely want to believe.
This is a specific person trivia. Samuel Jackson. Samuel L. Jackson.
Tied all these motherfucking snakes on this motherfucking plane.
Ah, good movie. No disbelief whatsoever. I believe every inch of that movie. So Samuel L. Jackson grew up with a stutter. He still kind of suffers from that stutter. What does he do to help himself get over that stutter?
Say the word fuck.
You're so close.
It's not curse?
No, you're close with the word fuck.
He has sex?
Yeah, there you go. Anytime he's in a conversation, I want to see that. You meet Samuel Jackson on the street and he starts to stutter. Wait, oh God, wait, come here.
get your fucking ass over here.
Bend over. Ah, oh, there we go. Anyways, as I was saying.
So I was close with fuck.
Yes. And well, I've got one clue for you that will completely give it away if you want me to.
He says motherfucker.
There it is.
Motherfucker.
There's a reason why motherfucker's his catchphrase, and it's because it helps him with his stutter.
I like his wallet in Pulp Fiction. Badass motherfucker.
So he even says it says here that he says it every day, even if it's only under his breath, to keep himself from stuttering.
Motherfucker. Well, there you go. Motherfucker. I'm pretty sure we say it at work probably 1,000 times.
Oh, yeah. It's like a period on a sentence for me at this point.
Yeah.
How was your day today, motherfucker? Hey, motherfucker. Go back to your room.
All right. So, that's it. I'm throwing the towel in.
The somnambulance is increasing. See, that's another freaking Latin word, I'm pretty sure.
What, ambulance?
Somnambulance, which is sleepwalking, but I think it still applies.
Yeah.
All right. So who are you?
I am Stalin Taco saying,
nice.
See how I
whoop, bring it around. Whoop,
motherfucker. Saying, dip me in your Monday melt.
And I am Bob Zombie fucking Fern Voyeur Scully saying,
Fern Voyeur.
Fern Voyeur. Zombie fucking watching. Yeah.
Yikes. All right. Well, have a good night.
Good night.
All right, bye.